Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Diabetes Awareness Month each November is designated to focus attention on preventing and controlling diabetes. Since nearly 30 million children and adults in the United States have diabetes, this effort really seems warranted. Today's program is going to focus on diabetes in Alaska, the resources for prevention and diagnosis and treatment. My guests today are in the studio, are Nelly Ayala. She is the program manager for the Alaska Diabetes Prevention and Control Program, which is part of the Division of Public Health, the state of Alaska. Also is Elize Rumley, who is with South Central Foundation. She's a registered dietitian and she's the diabetes educator. And also is Andre Shakin. He is executive director of Alaska Health Fairs in Alaska. Welcome to each of you. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
So since we're going to talk about diabetes, I make the assumption in my mind that all our listeners don't have a perfect understanding of diabetes. So Nelly, I'm going to ask you to give everybody a perfect understanding of it.
Wow, a perfect understanding. Wow.
Tell us about diabetes.
Sure. So diabetes is a disease in which a person has problems with sugar control or glucose control. And it's mainly comes in two different types of flavors that most people are aware of. There's type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune disorder. And there's type 2 diabetes, which is one that's seen most frequently in adults.
So tell me what autoimmune means.
So autoimmune means that your own cells are killing certain cells in your body. And one of the particular cells that it's killing is the beta cells that are in the pancreas.
And that's where insulin is made.
Correct. And insulin is the main hormone which helps you with sugar control in the blood.
All right. So type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune problem similar to some kinds of thyroid disease, some kinds of arthritis. And it's somehow the body's own immune system, which is supposed to protect itself from outside problems, gets messed up and decides to destroy the cells and the proteins that are designed to help us make insulin, which helps us get glucose into our cells.
Correct.
And type 2 diabetes is not autoimmune. So how does that happen?
So type 2 comes in later in life. Well, unfortunately, we're actually seeing it in among children and adolescents as well. But it usually comes out later in life, and you have risk factors where you either have a parent or a sibling that has type 2 diabetes, you have obesity or increased weight, you also have central adiposity or just more fat around the middle section of your body. You may have polycystic ovary syndrome, you're older, also just being of a different ethnic origin, such as being either Alaska Native, Hispanic, Black, puts you at an increased risk of having type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, the way I like to think of it, and you clear me here if I'm wrong, is that type 1, we just lose the ability to make insulin because of the cells that do are being destroyed. In type 2, we have several different mechanisms where there's resistance to the insulin we make. And in a sense, it just doesn't work very well.
Yes.
And that leads to very similar problems, but different diseases. There are different genetics. There's different ways they present. There may be a little bit differences in some of the complications. That makes sense?
Yes, that makes sense. I like to, the way I explain it in my family is I think of it as a switch. You know, when you go into a room, there's a switch to turn on the light or turn off the light. In the case of type 2 diabetes, that switch doesn't really work properly. Sometimes it may turn it on or off, depending on how bad or how poorly affected is the insulin receptors and such. Okay. And also about depending on other risk factors.
So you use the term receptor. So I want to define receptor. What happens with hormones, of which insulin is, there are receptors. That is, there is a lock and key mechanism, so to speak, where insulin has to put in the lock to get into the cell, and the receptor is the lock that that insulin key fits into. And so one of the problems can be that the lock and key don't work very well, or that there's something gumming up the lock. There's various mechanisms by which that type 2 diabetes, and some of which are highly genetic, it appears. Some of them may be related to lifestyle changes, so I forgot to mention at the beginning of the program that there are a couple of ways you can get in touch with us. First, recognize we're talking about diabetes. We're going to talk about testing. We're going to talk about how it happens. We're going to talk about understanding. And then if you have diabetes, what you can do to become better educated and engaged as a patient to work with providers to help you have the best outcome. So the contact numbers today, if you have questions about these individuals that are with us today that can help you answer those kinds of questions, are a local number in Anchorage is 550-8433. Our toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And we also have an email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. So over the next hour or so, any of those methods, you can send your question in. If you wanted to listen to the program later, we keep listening to the program. We'll tell you how you can hear the program at your convenience as well. Elizy, tell us how you tell people about diabetes. We ask Nellie to do it. Let's see if there's other ways, because people learn in different ways. They hear things a little differently. How would you describe diabetes?
Oh, thank you. Yes, the way I tend to explain to people is that, you know, diabetes, it is a progressive disease, and it is a chronic disease, which means that once you're diagnosed with this condition, you have this condition for the rest of your life. Because one of the things that I encounter with my patient is that they think that once your blood sugar is in good control, this condition goes away, and that is not necessarily true. Yeah. And it is progressive also, which means that the course of diabetes, it will change. So the treatment should not be stagnant. Just because something worked for you like 5 years ago, it does not necessarily mean that it is going to work for you now. And the treatment will advance, or it should be adjusted according to that condition.
Yeah, so especially what you say is true in my mind with type 1 diabetes, where you've destroyed the cells that are making it, and although you may be taking insulin in the form of a shot or a pump or something, if you were to stop it, your body does not have the ability to start making insulin
again.
So one of the misconceptions I hear you saying is people sometimes think they can stop once they have good control.
Correct. Yes. The type 1 especially, they are insulin dependent. Without that insulin, they cannot survive.
Let me ask for one little bit of clarification. My understanding, and I could be wrong, is that some type 2 diabetics with the right lifestyle changes may be able to get off some treatment. Is that, I don't know how often that occurs. A lot of times these are adults, and I'm not dealing with those, and I'm a pediatrician, but from my own information, that's my thought. Anybody want to chime in on that?
Yes, this is Nellie, and that is correct. With very regimented lifestyle changes, exercise, as well as good diet, good nutrition, and also changing habits, people can at points not necessarily cure the disease, but definitely decrease complications, and like Elise mentioned, actually take control and have it controlled in a way, control of the disease in a way. And in some cases, there was a study in 2007 by the American Diabetes Association where some people made lifestyle changes and they were able to not see any types of problems with type 2 diabetes 11 years or so after they had been diagnosed, and they were not taking any medications. Some of them, a very small percentage, were able to get off the oral medications. And there was a couple of people that have gone into the media that are very well known, like a CEO from Stanley Morgan, who's been very adamant about type 2 diabetes. And he actually made changes where he doesn't drink any more alcohol. He doesn't mm-hmm. smoke. Mm-hmm. He's very adamant about his diet, a very strict diet. And he exercises about 30 to 45 minutes a day. And he's able to not have any type of medications. However, I'm not sure how many people can actually do that and make those changes.
It depends on each individual's disease process, which in factors involved in it.
Correct.
Yes, this is Elise, and I think I agree with you that with my patients, a lot of them, that they do have really, they change their lifestyle. They can minimize the use of medication. However, like I said in the beginning, this condition is progressive, so we cannot forget about that. So sometimes, even if a person is doing everything right in terms of diet and exercise and stress management, the person may need that medication. It's not the person's fault.
Right.
That's what I try to emphasize.
Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. And again, I want to clarify, type 1 diabetes is, as far as I know, that just is not going to be cured. You're always going to have this problem until we figure out a way to put an implant that makes people have a new pancreas or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But type 2, we can control symptoms. We can control how much medication you may need. You may even be able to get off medication. But we hear you saying it's always going to be there, and we need to keep things up.
Right.
So, and type 2, again, is the situation where you are making insulin, but it's just not working effectively. It's gummed up. And so exercise makes the lock and key mechanism work better. Insulin works more effectively. Being overweight doesn't. It is mm-hmm. just the opposite. And so there are various and sundry things that can be done to affect particularly type 2 diabetes mm-hmm. over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
But the complications, which we haven't talked about yet, are quite similar in both of these situations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Andrea, I want to bring you in. So what's the health fairs got to do with diabetes?
Oh, sure. Thank you for this question. Well, we have been in existence since 1980, and Alaska Health Fair started as kind of like a place where people can come and learn about important health topics and talk to medical professionals, many of whom are our volunteers, and ask their questions about their health and get answers. So we have approximately 200 different health exhibits in our library, and diabetes is one of the bigger portions of it. We provide also, in addition to health education, including on diabetes and healthy lifestyle and nutrition, we also provide very affordable screenings, blood tests. And one thing that we're doing new this fall season, which is still going on, we still have a couple of health fairs going to happen in November. We are providing, in partnership with Nelly's program and working together with a group that consists of American Diabetes Association, YMCA, Nelly's program, we are providing free A1C blood tests at our health fairs. We are also using our contributions from PCLIC Give. I'd like to thank all the Alaskans who contributed to us a portion of their PFD, and also from Good Sense Gvia Foundation in Fairbanks. So we took this money, including the grant from DHSS, from Nelly's program, and we converted it into free A1C tests at our health fairs. So pretty much the first thing that, if you're concerned about diabetes, if you have a family history, what you can do is you can come to one of our events, you can learn about diabetes in general, and you can get access to this free screening and then act based on the results of it. So that's kind of what we have to do with this.
Okay. So you offer some testing. Let's define one of those tests, the hemoglobin A1C. And now I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind, what is the hemoglobin A1C? And while we're at it, what are other tests that can be done to help define the fact whether someone has diabetes or not?
Well, hemoglobin A1C is actually a test where you have the glycosylated blood, or the blood will, you'll have an idea of the percentage of hemoglobin in your blood. And hemoglobin is one molecule that helps carry oxygen and also has sugar attached to it. and the normal levels are about 6.5. If you have a level higher than 7 or so, I believe, it's been a while since I was in clinic, but over 7 or so, at two different times, you'll get a diagnosis of diabetes. There's other types of tests available. There's the fasting glucose test. There's the oral glucose tolerance test. And I think there's another one that I'm not.
There's a postprandial test a couple of hours after you eat something. I think there's various tests that have been validated as helpful in making the diagnosis. So the hemoglobin A1C is different than the others. There are kind of acute measures of what your glucose is at any one time, whereas the hemoglobin A1C really gives us an indication over 90 days, I think it is, what your blood hemoglobin's been or your blood sugar has been, because it affects the amount of sugar that gets attached to hemoglobin. And it's been found to be another way to tell if you are diabetic or not.
Yeah, and actually, that's one of the things that we find it's a little difficult to educate people on, that it's regarding those 90 days. Some people tell us that they're not going to eat any sugar or not eat anything the day before because they'll feel like that will actually change the test. And
it don't work that way.
Yes, it
doesn't. It doesn't matter which test you're doing necessarily. If you've got diabetes, you are not metabolizing sugar well enough, and you're not going to change the test results necessarily.
Exactly.
You agree with that, Elisa?
Yeah, this is Elisa, and I agree. A1C is at an average blood sugar, we say, of the last 2 to 3 months, and you don't need to be fasting because it is the average of the past 3 months. Yeah. To diagnose diabetes, just like you said, Nelia, the ADA, or the American Diabetes Association, now is saying that if you have A1C above 6.5%, that is diabetes. And other ways to diagnose diabetes, it will be the fasting plasma blood sugar above 126 or above in two occasions. The OGTT test, which is the oral glucose tolerance test. And also, if a person has a blood sugar that is 200 and shows up with symptoms of high blood sugar, that is also considered diabetes.
One of the questions I think is important for people to understand and may drive more people to get tested with the health fair or other ways to do this is that you may not know you've got diabetes, particularly with type 2 diabetes. Type 1, as a rule, you get pretty sick pretty quick, at least in kids, that's the case. Type 2, you can not be so aware. And so one of the messages I think that's important is that if you've got risk factors, and we'll define those here in a second, it's worth going and getting checked at the health fair. And even if you don't have risk factors, periodically it's a good idea to see what how you're doing. How many health fairs are going on in any one year?
We usually do approximately 100 health fairs.
Throughout the state?
Lots of work for our program directors, yes, throughout the state. And we still have one health fair that's going to happen here in Anchorage. It's going to be on Saturday, November 21st, from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the University Center Mall on the 36th Avenue. We have one that's coming up in Bethel, Saturday, November 14th, Bethel Community Health Fair at the Community Center. And we have one more in Soldotna, November 7th on Saturday. But we recommend that if anybody is interested to check out our website, alaskahealthfair.org, or just simply give us a call to 780-234. And our spring schedule is going to be available at around January time.
Now, I know you must screen for other things besides diabetes. A number of questions have come up. What kinds of testing is generally done or is available to everyone?
Sure. We have a wide variety of free screenings that are done by our volunteers, and those include blood pressure, heart weight, body mass, diabetes risk assessment, which is a self self-assessment test that we administer in this fall together with Nelly's program. It's a really simple test, literally 7 questions. We are going to make it available on our website very soon so that you can simply take it online. Food care screening, hearing test, lung function, memory, skin cancers, spinal screenings. We also have a wide variety of affordable blood tests. The most comprehensive, $45, covers 27 panels, including infection, anemia, liver disease, heart health, and many others.
So it sounds like a large number of those are free, and then you have some that you can go ahead and purchase if you wanted a wider screen of some sort. Huh?
Yes, exactly. And with Nelly's program, we are doing free A1Cs, but it is our goal to eventually offer all of the screenings for free at our health fairs.
You may not know the answer to this off the top of your head, but it dawns on me that it'd be kind of interesting for people who are also unaware that they may not have diabetes and how common this problem is. Do you know what percentage of patients who come to the health fair and do a screen for diabetes are found to be positive when they otherwise did not know they had diabetes? I'm envisioning there are people come who already have diabetes. Do you know how many new, what percentage of patients that are screened at each health fair turn out to be new diabetics?
We do collect statistics, which is collected in an aggregated form without any personal information
in it.
But unfortunately, I don't have the numbers.
Okay. All right. Well, let's ask Nelly about what's happening with diabetes. And if you don't mind, divide it into type 1 and type 2, if you can. Why are we talking about diabetes? I mean, we already established about 30 million people in the United States, somewhere closing to approach 10% of the population, seemed like last, I don't know how many people got in the United States, 350 million or some such. So what's happening? Are things getting better or are things getting worse?
No, unfortunately, things are getting worse. Diabetes type 2 is related with obesity. And so as we're getting more of an obese nation, then things are slowly getting worse with diabetes. In regards to type 1 diabetes, about 5 to 10% of children are type 1, which is a smaller percentage here in Alaska. Due to confidentiality, we don't really separate it by race.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to type 2 diabetes, there's a large scheme. 7% of Alaskans, according to 2013 Breakfast data, which is a survey in which people kind of self-state if they have heard of type 2 diabetes with a diagnosis and such. 7% of all Alaskans said they did have diabetes. 8.2% said that they actually had pre-diabetes, and 1.9% said they had gestational diabetes at some point in their lives. And pre-diabetes is actually the state in which they have before being diabetes, where the blood sugar is still higher, but they don't have enough of the risk factors to be diagnosed with diabetes.
Yeah. I think of it as like you're beginning to see evidence that their metabolism of glucose is beginning to change. And I guess maybe that's where my idea is. So if you're pre-diabetic, what's the evidence with type 2 that you can do some lifestyle changes and stave off the actual diagnosis? Does anybody know that one off the top of your head?
Yes, this is Elise. And for pre-diabetes, yeah, there are some criteria for us to diagnose pre-diabetes now. And some people do not know what pre-diabetes means, but it used to be called borderline diabetes. And there was a huge study called Diabetes Prevention Program in which they showed that with a lifestyle change and moderate weight loss, a person can delay that onset of diabetes. And the lifestyle change, so healthy eating, cutting some calories, and exercising more, had more impact than medication. And that was a very positive study that came out, and that's what we also promote in our facility.
Yeah. We also promote that together with Nelly's program. It sounds like we're giving away a lot of free stuff and this fall season, but I guess that's kind of the direction we're moving in. Nelly's program is making available to us an online personalized health improvement system called Alive PD, which using email notifications, and the personalized website helps people make this, you know, little life changes, little habit changes and little habits over a period of time where they can improve their health overall and sleep better and eat better and even lose weight. And I believe their blood sugar also improves. There was a scientific study done on that program, Alive PD, and it's one of the few programs that's on the market right now that actually helps improve health. We are making the subscription available for free at our health fairs through Nelly's program. Nelly, would you like to tell more about it?
Sure. So we went into partnership with a company called Nutrition Quest, which had worked with the Stanford School of Medicine as well as Berkeley in California. And one of the things that we are doing here in Alaska is we want to make sure that all of the programs that we promote are evidence-based. And the Life PD is one that has been evidence-based. It got recognition by CDC a few months ago and now has published their first random controlled trial last month in October. And we're trying to see how, if we can capture how many Alaskans have prediabetes and also to make things accessible to them. One of the main things that we've noticed is barriers, transportation, and healthcare access. So we were thinking that making this online program available to them, since one out of every three Alaskans is probably pre-diabetic and so many people don't know about pre-diabetes, then we thought that maybe this would be a good way in which people can actually learn about pre-diabetes as well as take care of themselves by this online program. So they can just go to Alaska Health Fair website if they can't go to an actual health fair and fill out some questions in terms of a screening to see the risk factors for pre-diabetes.
Which is done primarily for their benefit.
Mm-hmm. And sign up for a free subscription of a year and see if they actually see some changes.
And that's an online education program.
Correct. I've been trying it for a while just to make sure that if what kind of informations and what kind of problems I have with the program. You can link it up to your iPad. You can link it up to your smartphone. You answer a lot of questions about your everyday habits in terms of nutrition and activities and also what your goals are. And so you set up different types of goals for each week. And if you want, you can weigh yourself so many times in a week. Or if you want, you can try to change something in terms of your eating habits. It's kind of set up by you. And you get different types of motivating messages through email and telling you about things that can help you continue forward with making those goals that you set up in your action plan, or different messages telling you about, did you know this thing about diabetes, or did you know about this thing, this link between diabetes and smoking, and so forth.
All right. It is amazingly to me, we're halfway through the program already, so we have to take our short break. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Line One, your health connection. Our local number is 550-8433, 550-8433, toll free 1-888-353-5752, and our email address is line1, have to spell it out, LINEONE, at alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short break, about a minute, and then we'll continue our conversation on diabetes. This is Dr. Thad Woodard.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Line 1, your health connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, and I'm your host, Dr. Thad Woodard. And today we're discussing diabetes with Nellie Ayala of the Alaska Diabetes Prevention and Control Program with the state of Alaska, Elizee Rumley of South Central Foundation, and Andre Shaquin, who is Executive Director of Health Fairs, Alaska Health Fairs Incorporated. You can email questions to us during the next, we only have about 30 minutes left at line1@alaskapublic.org. You can call us locally at 550-8433, 550-8433. Our toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. And the usual warning, if you're listening to this program between 8 and 9 p.m. on a Monday evening, you're listening to a tape recording and we won't be able to take your calls. You can always listen to our program and past programs if you go to our archives. And to get to the archives, you go to alaskapublic.org, find the Line 1 link, and then go to our archives, and you can find programs for several years in arrears to listen to, or you can refer someone to those programs. Now I have to take a very short time to give two public service announcements. I promised to give a discussion about, or to remind listeners that tomorrow, November 3rd, from 7 in the morning till 9 in the morning, there's a panel discussion dealing with cancer and palliative care. It's going to be over at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, which is on 4000 Ambassador Drive. The public is welcome. There is no charge, a two-hour discussion on quality of life and palliative care. The other health public service announcement is a lot more self-serving, and I wanted to remind listeners, if you haven't heard already, that you are invited to enjoy a relaxed luncheon with myself and my co-host, Prentice Pemberton, Thursday, November 12th, not this Thursday, but the next one at 11:30 here at Alaska Public Media. The purpose is to learn more about the two of us, the Line 1 program, and our future plans and guests. And you're certainly welcome at that luncheon to join the conversation, so you can bring your ideas and suggestions for us. And we look forward to seeing you there. One proviso: if you're going to come, you need to purchase a ticket. And you'll need to go to alaskapublic.org for the details. If you want to go to that luncheon with Prentice and I here at Alaska Public Media, purchase a ticket, and you do that at alaskapublic.org, alaskapublic.org. Remember, that's Thursday, November 12th at 11:30 here at the Alaska Public Media Studios. All right, so much about me and this program. Let's, Elizee, tell us a little bit about your experiences with education. My experience with education is, one, it's extremely difficult to get people to come, and two, when they come, they are extremely happy that they came. Is that your experience?
Sure, yeah. I think, you know, I'm laughing because I think it is very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a condition that is so hard because people, well, first of all, when you're first diagnosed, you may not even have the symptoms.
Yep.
Not everybody will have the symptoms, especially the type 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, the doctor, usually when they refer, then we have higher chance that the patients, they will come to the class. And once they come, they are like, oh, my gosh, I should have done this long time ago. And once they come to the class, you know, we always emphasize them to come back every probably 2 or 3 years. Because no one can learn everything in one spot. And also to continue to go to the support systems or reliable online places, even through the state of Alaska, and continue to learn more about diabetes. And I'll say that at South Central Foundation, we have been quite successful. For those that are coming, we're able to lower their A1C. Every time they come to our class, we make sure that they do make one behavioral goal change that they want to make, and we follow up with that. And I would say that we've been quite successful with that. And our support group also has been increasing. We just had one today, and the number is increasing, and that is even open to the public. So,
all right. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. All right. Well, let's back up just a second again. I think it's really important to know that we have these educational systems that allows people to become much more educated about their problem and engage with physicians to help even do a better job at keeping diabetes under control. So why do we want to keep diabetes under control? What are the complications that occur? What are the consequences of not controlling diabetes?
Well, not controlling diabetes means blood sugar running high all the time. And the way I explain to my to people is that imagine that sugar as being like a bunch of teenagers running in the pipe that will start corroding the pipe. So the blood vessel is like a pipe that we have in our body, and we have blood vessel everywhere in our body. So that damage can happen anywhere. And some of the most common places that we see the damage happening, it is the eye, a kidney, it is the nerve damage, and a stroke and a heart attack. Those are the big ones. But again, you know, it can attack your brain, it can attack even your hearing and other places as well.
So it's a vascular complication problem, right, for the lung, and especially small vessels in particular.
Right.
In the kidneys, the heart, the lungs, or the head, and eyes are another place that's hit. There are difficulties with blood vessels in the legs, so that infections and healing becomes a problem. And,
right.
It's actually a kind of a nasty way for things to happen. Now, it doesn't happen to everybody the same way. There's genetic factors, but there's also preventative factors. And so that's where keeping the blood sugar under control is kind of the gold standard of what's suggested to do.
Right, and that's what we try to do, is to make a person understand, you know, when that blood sugar is too high and why it is important to not let that run high all the time, because all these complications that we're talking about, they are preventable. Yeah, and we're talking more about the quality of life and extending the life but living healthier. And my belief is that if a person gets a good education, then they can make informed decision, and it'll be their choice of what they want to do. But first, they need to know the choices available to avoid all these complications.
The CDC is rather notorious for not, I don't think, wasting money. I don't think about it. And they're very much in favor of having evidence-based information. So I'm guessing that the evidence for the educational programs is quite good in that it can affect behavior with individuals and therefore improve outcomes.
Yes, this is Nellie. One of the things that, and I'm so glad you brought that up and that Elisa is talking to you about the importance of education. One of the things that we really want to promote in the state of Alaska is the diabetes self-management classes in general, self-management classes altogether, since a lot of people have more than just one chronic disease linked with diabetes. But in particular, the American Diabetes Association guidelines that just came out in 2015, they actually proposed diabetes self-management education as being one of the gold standards, and it's heavily evidence-based. We, at the state of Alaska, look up information in terms of how we're doing in terms of our self-management classes with the state, and we have constant testimonials of people who actually say the self-management classes have made a difference. They are able to feel motivated to actually change behavior, because as an adult, changing behavior is not an easy task. It takes a long time. It takes a lot of motivation. It takes a lot of people to actually bring you together and motivate you each day to change your behavior, and also to deal with, in a way, kind of cope with the news that you have this chronic disease. Like LSA mentioned earlier, diabetes is not necessarily going to go away, and you may change it and control it, but that also takes time. And as you get older, it's a progressive disease. So you need a lot of support from family. You need support from the community, support from your healthcare provider. And so the self-management classes just gives you a little bit more education in terms of the disease, how to manage it, how to handle differences with stress, because that also changes when you have diabetes, how to handle differences with infections, as you said. And one of the biggies here in Alaska is tuberculosis. Another thing about, and it makes you a little bit prone to having TB as well. I mean, we've noticed links with that in other parts of Alaska. So it does impact your life in a lot bigger scheme than you expected.
I'm not sure we ever got around to really enumerating succinctly the risk factors for diabetes, and I think that would be important to do. Elize, would you put some on the table, and then we'll ask the other guests here if they want to add to those. What factors do you think increase the risk? And again, we've got to keep in mind there's type 1 and type 2, and there are different illnesses, and so it's not the same for each one.
Right. And like you said, type 1 is autoimmune disorder. We don't necessarily know the cause, but there are some autoimmune markers for that, and there are genetic involved in that. For the type 2 diabetes, well, first is the age. So the ADA, which is the American Diabetes Association, is recommending everybody above age 45 to start screening. Another fact, well, the racial background. So being African American, American Indians, more so than Alaska Native, Hispanic population, Asian Americans, they would have a higher incidence of type 2 diabetes. The biggest one for us, it is the issue with weight and having a sedentary lifestyle. And you can see that even in other parts of the world where when they adopt this the Western diet and the Western lifestyle, which means being sedentary and gaining weight and having fast foods everywhere, more processed foods, then it seems like people are gaining more weight. When a person gains more weight, in general, you can become more insulin resistant, and from there develop more the type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm.
And the other risk factors that come to mind?
Well, there's the family history. If you have a parent or sibling with type 2, and also gestational diabetes, if at some point you as a woman, while you were pregnant, the doctor told you that you had diabetes, mm-hmm. or if you delivered a baby that was 9 pounds or heavier, then it also puts you at an increased risk for diabetes. And there's a lot of misconceptions when it comes to diabetes. This idea that you might get it when you get older, or that you need to eat different types of foods. And also the one thing that I keep on hearing, and I'm not sure if Elisa mm-hmm. keeps on hearing as well, is that it's not me. It's not going to happen to me. I don't have it. Like we said earlier, you don't necessarily need to show any signs or symptoms, and it doesn't hurt if you don't want to get screened by a blood test. There's so many paper tests that we have available through Alaska Health Fairs and your provider online that you can take that will give you an easy score to let you know if you're at higher risk for having type 2 diabetes. And also free resources, like LSA said, here in Anchorage, South Central Foundation opened up their support group to actually provide information to just anybody, not just people that are of Alaska Native background. Anybody who wants to come in and join and listen to more information about diabetes is welcomed at South Central Foundation.
So, Andre, just to get back with you, people can go to these screenings. You said there's one November 21st. Here at the University Center. So there's one more, I think that was the date here in Anchorage, there's one in Bethel. You're doing 100 per year. For the most part, you can get screened for diabetes without cost, and you can get hooked up to an online program to help you work towards lifestyle changes.
Yes, that's correct. And our schedule is gonna be available in January. We're probably gonna have another 50 or 60 health fairs happening in the spring. We have health fairs in South Central Houston, Chugiak, Girdwood, Palmer, Wasilla, Soldotna, Anchorage. We also do health fair in Bethel, in Juneau, Yakutat, Hyder in the Southeast, And in the Tanana Valley and northern regions, we have health fairs in Fairbanks, several Nome and North Pole and nearby communities there. If the best way probably to get access to the self-assessment test for prediabetes is to go to our website, alaskahealthfair.org, go to attend the health fair page and subscribe to our newsletter. And in our newsletter, I'm going to include this link as a free resource, and people will also be able, in addition to just assessing their score, which is done automatically, you just answer some multiple choice questions. Once you click the submit button, you'll also get access to this personalized online health improvement system on Alive PD that you can try and see if it works for you.
So, LZ, why have we had the increase, particularly in type 2 diabetes? I'm not sure how much type 1 has been increasing off the top of my head. I know type 2 has, because that's the lifestyle-dependent form of diabetes. So what's the consensus of the expert why we're seeing increasing prevalence of diabetes?
Well, and we mean the type 2 diabetes, right? It is definitely, you know, the genetics, I think it's been always there. We haven't changed the genetics. I think we're not excluding any racial background, basically, when we talk about those risk factors. Mm-hmm. So it is directly linked with lifestyle and the aging process. Mm-hmm. We cannot do anything about aging. But about the lifestyle, I think we can. Mm-hmm. We are seeing the trend in the obesity. We have that map in the United States showing the obesity trend, and the diabetes is just following that.
Okay.
And you can see that in other countries as well. And the fact that, you know, we live in a society that we want everything to be automated. Everything automated is better. So we're moving less and depending more on electronics and not having enough physical activity in a day.
One of the things I've thought about doing in my mm-hmm. office is to get a picture of students, a whole bunch of black and white, because there wasn't very many color pictures back in the 50s, and just have a picture of everybody who was living in the United States, or a large consortium of people that lived in 1950. And it doesn't take but a second to look and see, well,
something has changed.
We definitely look different than we did 40 or 50 or 60 years ago. So yeah. I like to think of it as food has become more plentiful and cheaper. We've managed to figure out how to do that. And at the same time, we figured out, well, we don't have to ride bikes or walk anywhere anymore. And
right.
we can certainly sit inside and watch a TV more than we read books. I don't want to knock out the books by any means. But so we suddenly are putting in more calories and we're burning off less calories. And as a consequence, not just the United States, all Western mm-hmm. societies, all countries are going through this. And so in a nutshell, all this program is about trying to help everybody understand that this is a big burden being added to the health of our country and the world that's going to come to roost because it's associated with being overweight. And there's a clear a marker with that. And if we need to just begin to try to address that, as hard as it is. And behavior change is difficult. I'll be the first to be a witness on that stage.
Yeah, you're right. And the other factor is that a lot of people, they don't even know how to cook anymore. So they depend on all these processed foods, and they're cheaper. And even if they eat in a small amount, they're getting more calories that way. So one thing that we are trying to do at South Central Foundation is we are having these cooking classes, not only the weight management classes and diabetes classes, but also to teach this basic that we are losing as a society. So it would be nice to see more at the government level, maybe taxing some of the junk foods mm-hmm. And probably promoting or give more subsidies to healthier foods, and at the same time teaching them how to cook and consume them.
Yeah, and this is Nelly again. And one of the things that I do feel is very important is that knowledge about nutrition, because I feel like that's a really large misconception in terms of what's nutritious and this now new idea about supersizing everything. For example, when you go to the movie theater now, when you ask for a medium soda, you take a look at that soda or just a medium size of a particular drink, that's about 12 to 16 ounces. The average size is about 8 fluid ounces. I don't think many people are aware of that. And also the sugar that's actually placed in that drink when it comes to sugar content and also the amount of calories it takes. Not that you need to necessarily know how many calories it is, but just being conscious that maybe that's not necessarily the right portion size for myself. Maybe that's not necessarily how much I should be eating of that particular content. Like maybe I should just have one hot dog instead of three, or I should just have one small French fries instead of extra large, or instead of drinking that glass of milk with a bunch of chocolate, maybe I should just have a small, normal size of milk carton. Those types of things, I don't think it's something that people think about anymore.
We only have a couple more minutes. I'm a little surprised we haven't had more emails or phone calls. Let me give them the address or the phone numbers again. Locally, 550-8433. We only have about 5 or 6 minutes. 550-8433. Or our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. I did get one email wanted me to announce or to recognize that there is a support group the first Tuesday of every month at Providence Hospital in the Aspen Room, 6 to 7:30, a support group for parents of children with type 1 diabetes. We, in a sense, have kind of not given type 1 diabetes its due, but unfortunately type 1 diabetes, although activity levels are helpful, diet is helpful, this is a autoimmune problem, and the ability to control that problem with diet and exercise alone is going to be limited because you're just not able to make insulin once that disease is fully going.
One thing that I would like to say, Dr. Woodard, is in regards to the resources. We at the State of Alaska Diabetes Prevention and Control Program have different partnerships with different organizations throughout the state, South Central Foundation being one of them here in Anchorage. And we have them available on our website at www.diabetes.alaska.gov, where you can check to see all of the different types of prevention programs and self-management classes that we have available throughout the state. For example, we're going to have another one starting this November 10th through December, Tuesdays from 2 to 4:30 p.m. at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension. And the classes are 6 weeks long. They meet weekly, and they cost $30, or you can apply for scholarships, which are always available, and contact Leslie Shawcross to learn more information about it by calling 907-786-6313. So we have a different variety and flavors of child management classes available for different individuals depending on the need.
Jackie, you're on line one. We got about 4 minutes. What can we do for you?
Yeah, you mentioned symptoms, but if you have diabetes but it hasn't gotten to the point where you have symptoms, what symptoms should you watch out for?
So pre-diabetic people who may not have obvious diabetes. Oh, yeah, all right. Yeah.
You don't know have it.
What
symptoms might you experience that would tell you go to your doctor?
Yeah, well, many times the point is you don't. It's like someone with high blood pressure. You need a test. Somebody with poor lung function with asthma may need a test to really tell. You can't tell what your vision is till somebody gives you a vision screen, especially if you're a kid growing up with vision problems. You don't know what normal is. So the point is after 45, it's now recommended that everybody get that test. It could be symptoms that would begin to happen is that because your glucose is in your bloodstream is too high, you tend to get up much more frequently at night, having to go to the bathroom. You're maybe drinking more water and maybe even losing weight and certainly not feeling good. Those would be the general symptoms I would think you might experience once it's pretty obvious.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. Let's see if we can get one more call in here. Robert, he's gone. Okay. All right, we're on our last couple of minutes. And one thing I do with this is just what's the last thing people want to have that you say that we want people to remember, because they're not going to remember everything here? Elize?
Well, type 2 diabetes is the most common one, and what I want to tell people is that get informed, because all the complications that you hear outside, they are all preventable. And so get the knowledge and meet with your provider, with your dietitian, with your diabetes educator, get the support that you need so you can prevent the complications. That will be my main message.
This is Nelly. For me, I think it would be on the same lines as Elisa said, get informed, make sure you have the education. If for some reason you feel like you need a referral or some advocate for yourself, talk to your provider, state your concerns, and also just get more education online. Visit our website or also the American Diabetes Association and gain more knowledge.
Andre?
Well, and for me, I wanted to say thank you to Nelly and other programs that work with us. And if you need help or think you need help, come to our website, alaskahealthfair.org, subscribe to our newsletter, check out the health fair schedule, come and get tested, and act if you need to.
So the online program that you are promoting is a lifestyle change program, validated, been very helpful. Developed or at least coordinated or assured by Stanford University. So it's a very reliable site, and that is free.
Correct. We're making it free now for people here in Alaska. All they need to do is just go to the Alaska Health Fair website, answer a couple of questions, screening questions mainly for us, and then just sign up. You don't need to tell us your identity, and you can get a free subscription for the plan.
So we all need to remember we can eat less, we can exercise more, and I'm telling my patients that those two things are pretty good advice, and we need to be careful since accidents and our unintentional injuries are also one of our big problems. We're living longer. The quality of life may not be that good if we don't start addressing some of these issues that are very strongly related to age. Well, thanks to each of you for being here today. I appreciate it. Nelly Ayala, who is Alaska Diabetes Prevention and Control Program Manager with the state of Alaska. Elise Rumley is a dietitian and diabetes health educator with South Central Foundation. And Andre Shaquin, who is executive director of the Alaska Health Fair. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Remember, you can always go to our website, alaskapublic.org, where you can find the Line 1 archives. You can refer somebody to listen to the program, or you can listen to this program at your convenience. On the next Line 1 program, my guest is Dr. Dale Trombley. Dr. Trombley is a local physician who's providing Conserje medicine here in Anchorage. If you don't know what that is, then you're going to need to join me Monday, November 9th at 2 p.m. Remember, we're on FM 91.1, Alaska Public Media. Pat Yack is chief content officer at Alaska Public Media. Evan Erickson was our audio engineer, and he also edits our website. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.